Hey friends, welcome to the Rhythms for Life podcast, where each week we talk about four rhythms that help you reduce stress and anxiety and take charge of your emotional health. Rest, restore, connect, create. Welcome back. I'm Rebecca.
And I'm Gabe. And this is kind of fun. It's our final episode of our Say Yes season that was brought to us by AIM, Agape International Mission. So thank you to them for helping make this whole season. I know we've had so many great comments from people who this has kind of opened their eyes to saying yes to new things in their life this fall as they head into the new year.
Yeah, we loved this conversation about saying yes to God and saying yes to the things He invites us to. Sometimes that requires surrender and risk. But what a beautiful season. We love it. We're excited to have a new season coming in January for the new year. But in the meantime, what we're really wanting to talk about today is the fact that it's really cold and we're wearing winter coats all the time. And we finally did bring our tree up from the basement. I know you're waiting with bated breath.
Yes, the tree is getting decorated.
Yes.
Actually, tonight.
Yes, it is. And we are so pumped about our emotional health retreat this week on Thursday and Friday in Franklin.
Listening, I know we have over 100 people coming. It's sold out and we're just excited. I mean, I think both of us yesterday were chatting about how much we're just anticipating it, but also praying into it because we're digging into so many different issues, people's past trauma, thoughts that people, you know, come into a retreat like this hoping to gain some healing and some understanding. And we're just being prayerful about that. Join with us, even if you're not a part of this, and praying for just this whole community and people who are investing to really work through major issues and things that they want to better understand that will happen in the days ahead.
Absolutely. I really believe that these retreats for us, after doing this for two full years now, it's a catalytic moment to do this kickstart, I think, for the integration of our whole life, right? I think a lot of times we're looking for healing maybe physically, or we're looking for it relationally in our marriage, or maybe we are struggling with anxiety or depression. And truly, the retreats are to bring all these things together so that we're focusing on relationships and work and inner healing and our physical health. And so we're so thankful for this work. If you did not make it to a retreat in 21, but you'd like to be a part of one in 22, we're going to keep going.
Yeah.
As long as you guys keep selling these out, we're going to keep doing them because it is one of our most precious, exciting weekends for the year. So go to RebeccaLyons.com/retreat and you can see what's coming for 22 as far as the one in Lost Valley in April 3rd through 6th, and then some more that are TBD for Franklin.
Yeah, and it'll be a great Christmas gift. Some of you might be thinking about something to give your spouse for Christmas, that Lost Valley one in April. What a fun gift to just say, hey, this year we're going to do something fun together and we hope you'll join us. That's already starting to fill up. So if you're interested, get into that pretty soon at RebeccaLyons.com/retreat. And today we're having a conversation with a couple that you and I personally admire and respect, Chris and Jenny Graby. And they wrote a book called The Rhythm of Us, Create the Thriving Marriage You Long For. And what we love about that, of course, is the application of rhythms into our marriages, into our practices, into how we come together and meet one another and love one another well in all of the ways, from Sabbath practicing as a family to date nights to all the many things that are critical for rhythm in your marriage.
Yeah, and so I love how they take this deep dive of like five ways that you can live in rhythm in your marriage and what are those core rhythms and how do you walk them out. So let's listen in now.
Don't be limited by networks when it comes to choosing your healthcare provider. There's another way. Samaritan Ministries is a community of Christians who pay one another's medical bills without the use of insurance. As a member, you'll have biblical, affordable healthcare where you're free to choose your doctors, your treatments, and your hospital. Consider this: a medical emergency arises, you don't have to check with an insurance company to ask about what hospital to go to. You just go. And then after your care is received, your medical bills are sent to Samaritan Ministries, and they'll notify members to pray and send money directly to you to help you pay those bills. And members have round-the-clock access to online resources to help locate a quality provider, price medical procedures, and chat with a medical professional before visiting the doctor, saving time and money. Healthcare freedom. Learn how it can be yours today at SamaritanMinistries.org/RFL podcast.
Hey guys, welcome to the podcast.
Hey.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yes, we love it. You guys are local, neighbors, friends, yep. and also people who care so much about marriage and relationships thriving, which is something we talk about all the time.
All the time. And I'm so thrilled to talk about rhythms today with you guys, because I know rhythms is a big conversation and a word we use in both of our homes all the time. Your book, Rhythm of Us, is out this week. And I love it because you really center it around your marriage. And as we have had these conversations on Rhythms for Life these last couple of years, it's just so much about living in rhythm. It's not just for us individually, but how do we live it out as a team, as a family, as a couple, and then ultimately in our community. So let's jump right in, because you begin talking about a rule of life. And we have talked about this a few times on the podcast with different guests. And I'd love to see what catalyzed that idea for you, and then maybe unpack a little bit of what that rule of life became for you guys.
Yeah, I'm going to let Jenny take this one. She came to me and was like, let's talk about this rule of life. I was like, what in the world is that? So go for it.
Yeah, that's a lot of people's response, but I'm glad you guys are familiar with it. Yeah, I began studying a rule of life a couple years ago, and it was really revolutionary for me. But as I began to practice it, I realized if you're married, you actually have a responsibility to consider your spouse's rule of life as well, because it's not just about you. And, you know, in our family, we have 5 kids. There's a lot going on. So my rule of life was not complete without considering his as well. So that really got us asking those questions of each other, of the Lord. What are the rhythms that you've called us to create the life that we want together? What's going to take us where we want to be 10, 20, 30 years from now? So that kind of began the whole journey for us.
Yeah, so 5 kids. I mean, that immediately I'm like, you probably have a lot of rules in your house. So she's like, let's create another rule.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's just chaos. Yeah. Every day, like, did you eat? Did you survive? Slept? Okay, good. We're
Do
good.
Do you have shoes and socks? Okay.
Yeah, but no, it's nice to kind of take these same principles and apply them to the kids on top of our marriage as well.
Right. So unpacking that a little bit more then. So what is a rule of life exactly? And then what did that look like for you guys?
So essentially, there's so many, you've talked to John Mark Comer, so I'm sure he unpacked it really beautifully. But essentially, crafting a rule of life is just a spiritual practice of looking at who you want to become in the future, and then crafting a set of habits or rhythms to get you where you want to go. And so when we do that as a couple, we envision the future us, who we want to be. You know, do we want to be, you know, at 60, sitting on the front porch watching our grandkids play, still in love, still wildly in love with each other? What habits do we need to practice today to get us there? So we actually sat down with couples who've been married that long, you know, to see what are those core essential rhythms that are true of them. And we actually found 5 that were kind of keystone habits across the board that we based our rhythm on and the book on.
I love this because it kind of invites all of us into it. You guys, you've been married 17 years, mm-hmm. right? Which is congratulations.
Thank you.
we feel like such veterans at 24.
24
lot. Marriages that are lasting these days, we all know the data that it's hard. I mean, sticking with marriage, staying with one another, not taking the temptation to just go do your own thing is countercultural. But what I love about how you guys approach this was talking to people who've been married even longer than that and going, how have you done it? And it's all about, we're all on this journey together. Like, how can we learn? So I want to unpack a few of these rhythms today so that everybody starts to get a sense of what were you discovering were the key ideas that have helped strengthen marriages, so that we don't just stay together and like, oh, we stayed married for a long time, but we actually have these thriving marriages. So what was one of the first ones for you guys that was impactful and that you felt like even in your own marriage, you were like, man, we haven't been doing this, but I'm challenged to start doing it?
Yeah, I think there was a lot of self-discovery in this. I mean, for Jenny and I, we come from 2 very different marriage backgrounds. I saw a lot of divorce as a kid. She grew up, her parents were together, they're still together. And so for us, it was like, okay, what we experienced coming in, now it takes 17 years of God walking with us, showing us, growing us, you know, 5 kids later. And we go, okay, we kind of like this thing we've built. What can we grow in? Where are we growing? How do we crystallize some of the rhythms that we have that maybe we didn't even know were there? And one of the ones that kind of shook out for us, that's probably one of my favorites, is the rhythm of awe. So like, I'm a 7 on Enneagram. Adventure is another one of the rhythms, but awe was one of those ones that we had the kind of the other 4 rhythms. But when it came to the rhythm of awe, it was like, it finally was that moment for us to go, okay, like when I see Jenny walking down in the morning and I'm sitting in my coffee in the office, I just had a moment where I'm just like, I'm in awe, just like we're in awe of God. And just constantly, you walk out, you see a sunset, you see a sunrise, you see your child playing in the background, you just have a moment where your breath's kind of taken away, that when we practice this rhythm of awe, it was one of those that surprised us and crystallized for us. It gave us words to this thing where we go, man, I don't know what this is, but it's really special. I never saw this growing up, but I'm just constantly in awe of who she is, in awe of what God has done in our marriage, in our life. So the rhythm of awe was one of our...
And so is that like a posture, essentially, towards looking at maybe everyday things, just with this different lens?
Yes, it absolutely is. And it's something we can practice every day as well. I love Mark and Jan Foreman have been big mentors of ours as well. And one of the things that they say is step into the painting, which is kind of a lovely way to talk about this rhythm of awe. But it's, you know, Mark describes it, when you drive by a sunset, don't just keep going, pull over and enjoy it. Like, take it in. If you're, you know, playing at the playground with your kids, don't just sit on the park bench. Get up and join in the moment. Like, really revel in the gift that you've been given. This spouse of yours is a gift. Marriage is an unbelievable gift that we remember on our wedding day when we're young and very much in love, but it can fade with time. But we practice that rhythm of staying in awe by remembering this is an unbelievable gift.
I love that. I love that awe requires noticing, yes. Right? You know, awe is happening all around us all the time, and we're just head down on our phone, right?
Yeah.
It can be so easily, we can be so easily distracted by the beauty. And I'm kind of laughing that you started the podcast talking about 6-year-olds sitting on their front porch rocking, because Gabe and I do that every day right now, and we're in our 40s. We're like, what will this look like when we're 60? But it was catalyzed by his parents coming to visit a few months ago, and they basically sat on the porch the entire visit. I think it's because he keeps the air very cold in the summer, and they were like trying to thaw out. But I started joining them, and since then I would get up and just go watch the sunrise on our, and it really slowed me. I didn't want to jump into like journaling or reading. I actually just wanted to like watch the birds wake up and watch the sun come up, and just this reminder of how beautiful God's handiwork is, and that doesn't just end in creation. That does come in the form of our spouses or our children, and part of it is even not just noticing, but also celebrating. Did the awe kind of spill into that? Yeah, but like,
before you go there, I mean, when I walk out in my robe, I do feel like you're starting to look at me in awe.
It's a moment of awe.
I think the bus driver.
Shocking awe.
No, the best is that you put our kids on the bus in the robe, and so I feel that the bus driver is actually in awe.
Yeah, he is. John is always in awe every morning.
That is hilarious.
But you guys, going back to the beginning of your project here, you recognize something we all fall into, which are these ruts that keep us from ever experiencing. And I'm sure people are listening today that feel like they're in a rut. They can't imagine being in awe of their spouse right now. They're like, my spouse is annoying. I don't even know what I would say to him today if I saw them. And we get into these kind of ruts. And what is it about? How do you get out of the rut? Because that cycle can pretty much lead marriages to total destruction.
Well, I think one of the rhythms we talk about is the rhythm of speaking life. And I think sometimes what happens when you find yourself in a rut, there's not a lot of life being spoken. There's words that are being spoken, but there's not a lot of life being spoken. So a simple practice that people can get into is start to acknowledge, because there's something that your spouse is doing. If you're in a, if even if it's like you're going to work every day and you're helping pay the bills, or you're driving the kids to school, or you're helping clean up around the house, there's a moment where you can shift your heart and shift your posture and start to speak life, even if it's in a small way. And that seed starts to produce some pretty amazing fruit. And then you start to watch how it unpacks. And so there's a lot of power in our words. The scriptures tell us that, you know, there's power in your words, in the tongue. And so I think when you start to see that coming, where you're seeing yourself in a rut, specifically in an area, you know, one of the things we talk about a lot is, you know, you're in some sort of rhythm. And the question is, do you like it? You know, we'll ask couples all the time, are you in rhythm or out of rhythm? And people will know, oh man, we're absolutely out of rhythm here. And a great way to kind of shock panel that or help boost that to get going is starting with the rhythm of speaking life. And then also posturing your heart in a way, going back to awe. I mean, it goes with all of the rhythms. But if you can just go, okay, what? Wow, let me remember, because I was in awe of my spouse at one moment. Maybe it was on our wedding day, or maybe it was when we were dating. But if you can reflect on that, remember that, and help God remind you of that, it could spark for you a nice little flame that you could help kind of posture and let God guide it to blow into a bigger fire.
So what's some examples of life? I mean, just practically, because I do think sometimes we can get in the managing the calendar. I feel like sometimes our dates turn into calendar meetings, and then we're like, okay, we can't let this just be momager and, you know, dad. Because like you said, you have five kids. Like how do you even integrate like speaking life just on the regular without having to be a special like, hey, let's go out and let me just be in awe of you and tell you how awesome you are. But what does that look like in a day-to-day simple way?
I think it's very simple but really powerful. The best place to start is when you think something nice, just say it out loud. And that sounds really simple, but Chris is so good at this. He's a 7 on the Enneagram. He's an encourager. Like when we first got married, he did it all the time, and it kind of made – I felt so awkward with it because I just wasn't in the habit of doing that, and I didn't realize that I wasn't. But he really modeled that for me and kind of set that tone in the culture of our marriage and in our family over the years. So it's something that just kind of flows naturally for him, but it's something that we've had to work on and train our kids in. When you think something nice, just say it out loud, even if it's something small, like you said, like, oh my gosh, thank you for taking the kids to school this morning so I could go for a run. I feel so much better. Like just saying that out loud. We all have things that we can acknowledge in our spouse. It's just having eyes to see and speaking it out loud.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. So many times I think these things in my head and then I never say them. You know, and then it's like a week later where Rebecca's like, well, why don't you thank me ever for fixing dinner? And I'm like, well, I feel very thankful about that, but I never tell you.
Right.
So it doesn't count.
It doesn't. And yeah.
I think that's just a good practice is when you think it, say it, even if you feel like it's not a big deal to you, probably to who you're saying it to, it's going to matter a lot. You guys also care a lot about, you know, in the culture of craziness and five children and speed and progress, that slowing down's important. We talk a lot about the rest rhythm for us personally and the Sabbath being really important in our weekly rhythm. But how did you guys approach the idea of making sure you're being restored? And I want to get practical too. Like, how do you guys get time for just you? Because I'm sure a lot of people listening that have a lot of kids, it's really complicated to get any good time alone. So I'd love to hear how you guys think about that weekly, annually.
Yeah.
For us, you know, we have these two chairs in our office that we just will sit and talk to each other, you know, and we find, you know, we try and find those, maybe it's an early morning. Sometimes it's finally a Saturday morning when like no kids have to be up and go anywhere. And, you know, obviously the 6-year-old's still waking up early, but the teenagers will sleep as long as you do 11, you know? So, but the kids start to know like, okay, like, you know, and it's okay. And sometimes you have to sacrifice like, okay, the rules of like too much screen time or whatever. It's like, okay, go watch a movie. We're gonna talk. And so we just find it because I want to talk. Like I always want to talk. Like, hey, I'm, you know, maybe I'm one of those weird guys. I'm like, let's talk it out. And then when I get Jenny in a talkative mood, I'm not gonna stop. Like we're just gonna keep going. And so I think the kids just know, like, okay, like we just show like our marriage, our relationship is really important to us. And it's important to you. So you need to let us have this moment. And sometimes they listen, sometimes they don't. But but we just try and steal away as best we possibly can, 30 minutes, an hour here and there.
Yeah. One of the things we talk about in the book is intentional slowing and spontaneous slowing because we need both, right? Like we have to plan for those things or they won't always happen. But we also have to kind of practice saying yes to those moments when they come because usually it looks like inconvenience, right? For me at least, I have a list of to-dos that I have to get done. And usually a moment for Chris and I to steal away comes in as an interruption to one of my tasks that I'm trying to accomplish. So really training ourselves to say yes when they come. You know, if it's, hey, we have a second, the kids are quiet, let's go on the back porch and drink a glass of wine and, you know, just have a conversation uninterrupted. Like we have to take those moments and say yes to them.
We're back to the porch. We do the same thing.
Do you guys have any kind of rhythm annually where you try to get away? Because I know for Rebecca and I, that always has been important. It was to always structure, even if it was one night, two nights, but trying to have a moment every year, even if that meant hiring a babysitter that we didn't know that well.
Yes.
Which we've been, people have, you know, critiqued us for that, I think, at times. But we always, like you, thought this is our most important priority. And I've met lots of couples, you know, early in the marriage with young kids, and it's very hard for them to make that first jump to say, I'm going to leave my child at home and we're going to get away. I mean, we probably did that 10 months in when Cade was born.
Okay, it wasn't with someone we didn't know. It was with your parents.
Yeah,
then. Just for clarity.
Right.
But do we really know him anyway?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, it's a great question. I think for us early on, I mean, gosh, little kids, the whole thing. I mean, we definitely do it a whole lot more now. And it's definitely a rhythm that we absolutely do. I mean, I'll always challenge my buddies, my friends who take family vacations all the time. I'm like, yeah, family vacations are great, but you have to get away with each other. And I don't know if they're doing the family vacation because it's like, well, the kids are going to be gone some year and they don't necessarily like each other. And they're like, I can't imagine going away for, you know, a few days with them. But all that to say is like, we absolutely love getting away with each other. And we try for sure once a year, sometimes twice if we're greedy.
If we're lucky. If we're,
yeah. But for sure, I mean, it's such an important thing for us in our marriage.
Yeah, and I don't think it's a family vacation. I think we've renamed that a family trip.
Oh, it's 100%
is. Absolutely. A trip. Absolutely, yeah.
It's kids, basically it's taking vacation. Life at home and taking
yes,
it on the
it's
road.
It's a lot of work. It's good, but it's a lot of work.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I love that. I know we joke that we would never fight if we had never become parents. But, and let's talk about that for a minute. Like, even just your differences in parenting, how have you found a rhythm to process that and work, because you do have different upbringings and mm-hmm. that impacted how you were raised. Mm-hmm. How has that played out in marriage of like finding a rhythm of even parenting in unity?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think, spoiler alert, we're working on a book now that's about family rhythms. So that'll be out much later down the line. But so we are kind of taking these rhythms, these five core rhythms of healthy couples, and translating that into what that looks like in our family. So it totally applies. Speaking life over your kids, like that is ground zero. Like that's where we start building that culture. And we're pretty much on the same page there, you know, with these five rhythms. So that helps a lot in the way that we parent. Seeking adventure together as a family, like that is huge. Saying yes to those moments of slowing down with our kids and staying in awe of getting this time with them, you know, that we talked about saying yes to those interruptions when they come. And nobody is better at interruptions than kids. I'm sure you guys know that. That, you know, we have the sweetest little four-year-old still in our house, and we have teenagers. We have 16-year-olds and 13-year-olds, but this little four-year-old just, I mean, she is just everyone's favorite little thing. And she just comes up and always wants your time. So being able to say yes to her is so incredible.
Not that we have a favorite kid. I don't want anybody to hear that. And then listen to this years ago. Okay, we always knew you were the favorite. She's just the youngest, right? She's the baby. She's still talking pretty cute. But, you know, for us, you know, we both definitely came from two different backgrounds. You know, we saw a lot of different ways, good and bad, on both sides. And I think for us, just through the years, you talk about 17 years or 24 years, you just start to like go, the trust factor is so there. It's like, I know your heart. You know my heart. Like, I'm not trying to, you know, do a thing with our kids that you don't want to happen. But let's just, we kind of know where each, I mean, we got married because we saw a path that we both go, yeah, this makes sense. This agrees. And then along the way, we would find, you know, oh, I'm thinking public school. You're thinking private school. What does that look like? How do we flush that out? How do we work together on that? And so some of it just comes through communication and time and trust and knowing through the years that, okay, he's actually for me and she's actually for me and we can do this together. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, not that we're out without conflict. That's for sure. We're still human. But yeah, it's just as the years go on, you start to trust and know what the other one's wanting and try to do the best you can with that.
Hey friend, I want to take a moment to share about Agape International Missions, our partner for this Say Yes season. My book, A Surrendered Yes, is all about letting go and living free. And what I love about this partnership is that it's a tangible expression of something we can do right now with the freedom we've received. Just a reminder that you are invaluable to the kingdom of heaven, and God has appointed a specific role only you can play. You are needed and wanted, chosen and set apart, beloved and worthy. And I believe that as you find freedom, you're able to go and help others find this freedom too. I also believe that here on this podcast, we can go beyond listening and do something amazing together today. So today, I'd like to do this by partnering with AIM. You see, AIM literally helps rescue girls from trafficking and empowers them to live free. When you give to AIM at any amount, you become a part of someone else's freedom story. How beautiful is that? And for a limited time, when you sign up for The Village, AIM's passionate community of monthly donors will send you a free signed copy of A Surrendered Yes. That's how much I believe in this work. So say yes. Go to aimfree.org/sayyes and sign up now. Why wait? We can help bring freedom to someone who doesn't have it. Here's to letting go, living free, and saying yes. Again, that's aimfree.org/sayyes.
What has been most surprising for each of you that when you got married 17 years ago, you had no idea marriage would have this type of impact on your life? Mm-hmm. What is something that surprised you now that you've been married this long?
I'm always the first to talk, so I kind of want to let her go. But you process whatever. Okay. For me, I think I just didn't realize how selfish I was, you know? And yeah. Jenny has been such a gift to me to think about everyone else. Like, think about the others. She's so good at thinking about me and the kids and, you know, and so through the years, it's just been nice to start to go like, hey, can I posture myself as a servant versus walking into a room going, what can I get for me? And so I would not have that thought process or that posture 100% if it weren't for Jenny, because we would get married at the very beginning of our marriage. We'd walk out of a dinner party. I'm like, all right, what did I – tell me where I screwed up. Like, just tell me. Where's all the – what I shouldn't have said what and what and what and what. So as we kept going through the years, like it was – I'd get in the car like waiting for my – you know, like you could have done better here. I'm like – but it's been nice because she's helped me realize like if I walk in ready to serve some pretty cool things can happen, turn my eyes on other people. So that's one of the big takeaways for me.
I think something that surprised me, I don't know, I'm a processor, so I like to think deep through things. I don't know. I heard somebody say this last week that marriage is such an incredible gift that it's meant to grow deeper and stronger over time. And that only happens by walking through trials together. And I think something that has surprised me about Chris is just his resiliency to walk through trials together. Like, and I love him more today than I did 17 years ago. Not because we're better looking, although you totally are. I'm not throwing you under the bus there, but because our love has grown by watching each other handle the conflicts of life and the things that we've had to navigate together, all kinds of things. It just has grown my respect for him and my love for him. Absolutely. He's just blown me away.
Oh, sweet. I feel like we should leave the room. And I'm just kidding. I love this.
How old were y'all when you got married?
24.
24. Were we 24? Yeah, 24.
Yeah, I mean, we were 22.
Wow.
23. Yeah. You were 23. Yes. You're a little older than me. Just a little. Wiser. A little. Well, people don't seem to get married that young anymore, right?
Yeah.
Like, what do you think about that? And when you think about students today, 20-somethings, it feels like the move, I think the average age now for marriage is 29, 30.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So do you see benefits now looking back? I mean, if somebody's listening, they're in their 20s, maybe it's a guy. Let's put the pressure on the men here. And they're like, I need to get the good job. I need to have everything taken care of. And then I can support my wife. Then I'll get married. Like, do you think that's the right way to think about marriage?
Well, I think for us, like, you know, we were just on a wild adventure. Just let's go have fun. This is going to be awesome. I just got done doing MTV. She was, you know, it was just this wild ride, right? So I think we got pregnant real fast. You know, it was like, oh, that's how
after
babies are
we
made.
We got married.
You got pregnant, Chris?
Yeah, I did. It's weird.
It's funny how men say we got pregnant.
Isn't it?
They did play a role, well, I mean, but they're not actually pregnant.
You impregnated your wife.
Team Gravy. Yeah, I was there. It was great.
This podcast is going really
So we have a kid, you know? Like, we get pregnant at 5 months into our marriage, and you're just like, okay, you know? And so, you know, at that point, it was like no career, no money, no, like, there was no game plan. It wasn't like, oh, so then we're just like, well, we're on the kid track, so let's just have a bunch of kids. So we, you know, you do kind of forego the, oh, I want all the money. I want to build up my portfolio. I want to make sure I have this. Okay, then we'll have two kids and we've had all this fun and we're 30 or whatever. But I look up now and I go, I win for all those people who decided to wait and have two kids in their mid-30s, but great, they have a great portfolio. I have five children. One, I can't wait to see what happens with their life as it plays out. But two, I've got a really stable potential exit plan in my life because one of them is going to be really successful. They're going to pay for their mom, and I'm attached to her. Yeah. So, but no, I mean, we've got a full quiver, full house, and so I wouldn't trade it for the world. I think, you know, those who wait longer, just they don't have the gift of having five kids.
I think also we're a Christian couple, engaged, so we're definitely not having sex before marriage. And so our engagement was 5 months. We were like, let's get this thing wrapped up. And I don't know if that's the case for a lot of young people today. So I'm sure that has something to do with it as
they're
well.
They're not burning. They're not burning.
They're not
lying. Until they get married. Otherwise, they'd get married a little younger.
Right.
I do think I want to speak to the fact that you're saying the gift of five kids, right? I think sometimes people are so afraid of that responsibility. We've got this epidemic of just delayed adolescence where kind of we are still kids and how could we possibly manage our own kids or five of them per se? And what I'm hearing is that you're saying like you tripped into it, right? You had sex, you had kids, right? You got married. Well, not in that order. Married, sex, and kids.
Okay,
But when you think about what God, you know, what he commissions, what he mandates, what he blesses and honors is that exactly that, like being a covenant between a male and female, have sex, and procreate. And then, I mean, there's blessing around that, even though you don't know what you're doing. I mean, you definitely, I would say the same for us. We went rogue, you know, and then finding out with our firstborn that we had, with that, a Down syndrome diagnosis, that was another unknown in our entree to parenting. So one thing is, I think for those of you who are listening, maybe you've thrown your phone out the window by now at this part of the podcast. But for those of you who are listening and you are in your early to mid 20s and you're kind of going, I feel like I have to have life figured out before I can have that conversation about marriage or about kids or about whatever, I would just say, here's four people who are at 17 and 24 years in with 9 kids cumulative between the two of us, two couples. And, we still wouldn't trade it because we learned together. And when you have to arrive, it's almost like we're treating it like the way we treat God. Like we have to figure everything out before we can come to God, or we have to figure everything out and have it all buttoned down before we come to a marriage. And the truth is, like, the learning is in the doing, and the growth and the maturity happens in just walking it out. And so it's never too late to just to go like, hey, we're just going to do this, and we're going to trust that God, you know, goes before us and that he brings people around. And yes, of course. I mean, that first year of marriage, we did have several knockdown drag out. Not really, but I remember throwing like a slice of Velveeta cheese at you. I do remember that. And then like pacing around the apartment complex. But it was like more just like the pruning of that youthful zeal that was still done in covenant that said, hey, we're going to figure this out, and we're going to trust that God holds all things together. I don't know. That's what I'm taking from this. That's what I'm preaching from and taking from this conversation.
This episode was sponsored by Virginity Rocks and Get Married Young.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
No, we love you guys and so grateful for any time you take on a project like this as a couple. We've done a few things like we haven't written the book together yet, but we've done a lot together. And I know it's hard work, but such important work. And we need more and more stories out there where people are learning, how do we do this? How do we stay together? But how do we not just stay together and fight for that? How do we thrive in that? And so thank you for writing The Rhythm of Us, creating the thriving marriage you long for. We're so excited for more and more people to hear your story.
Wasn't that awesome?
Yep. Yeah, I love talking with them. I know many of you maybe haven't met them before or heard their story, but I'd encourage you, read their book, The Rhythm of Us. It's a great conversation starter for you throughout the holidays as we all look at the year ahead and go, what are our new goals? What are the ways we want to thrive in our marriage and in our family? And take seriously what it means to do the work, to actually put into practice all these ideas that you hear on a podcast, but it really takes implementation, and some of that's impossible unless we take a little bit of time and intentionality to plan how we're going to do that.
Yeah, I agree. So take the time to deep dive with your family. I know that we're going into Thanksgiving, and sometimes those are difficult conversations we'd rather avoid. But as we are learning, even Gabe and I are learning so much this year, is that when we're honest and kind, there's a lot of healing that's available to us in the relationships that sometimes feel strained. So I just want to challenge you guys, as you grab this book, or you're working on a marriage, or if you're single and you're just wanting to work on relationships with those that are around you, whether it's family or friendships, lean into honesty, lean into vulnerability, and know that that's going to create the connection and the healing that all of us are looking for.
And so as we head into next week and Thanksgiving, we're going to take the week off from the podcast, but I'd encourage you, host Friendsgiving. We're doing that this Sunday night with our friends, gathering several couples and friends to come together for an evening of conversation and gratefulness for the year past. And you can learn more about that. You can also get the guide on how to do it right at RebeccaLyons.com/Friendsgiving.